I have is 12-year-olds can sign up without their permissions, parents' permission. So in one way, this could be good if a 12-year-old has parents who don't believe in the COVID vaccine, but it's also bad if kids are just signing up without anyone. So in terms of the safety, so the web address mycovidrecord.health.nz, it looks on the surface looks like it's in New Zealand, but there's two issues here. The first is based on it's inside an American web server called Amazon Web Services. That server is actually based in America. So what creates some privacy issues for me is there is in America, our data is subject to American laws now. So there's the Cloud Data Act, the US Patriotic Act, and Stored Communications Act, which essentially gives the American government all sorts of access and reasons to be able to access our personal data. But saying that, the data that they can access is basically first, last name, middle name, home address, gender, date of birth, email address. So I think overall there's probably a bit of privacy there, but we're not fully private. Big issues in terms of most people is how secure is your email? How secure is your cell phone that has the digital certificate stored on there? What's stopping someone from taking your certificate off your phone or I mean, off your email and photocopying it or putting it on social media or giving it to someone else? That's, I think there's a whole lot of potential issues there which haven't been discussed yet.
I'm just wondering whether or not it's not just been discussed, but it hasn't been revealed. The fact that the website isn't a New Zealand one, should that have been something that the government should have alerted us to? Would they have alerted us to that? Would they have thought that that was something that we need not know? How concerned should we be that we are using international organisations to store our data, and it is effectively offshore.
Sure. For me personally, I find it concerning that it's not disclosed at the start. Because if it's not disclosed, then I want to know why. Then I start digging and trying to find out. And I have whānau who start, their imaginations go wild, and there's a lot of genuine questions, get arise. But when you sign up for a passport, if you can actually get on, there's a 2 pages of privacy information and terms of service, and then once you go through that, there's 2 living documents from the Privacy Commissioner. They're not full and final; they're still a work in progress. So I think that's an extra issue. If you're not highly, if you can't read, and if you can't concentrate on reading for 5 minutes in a row, if you can't read on your screen, you're probably not going to see all that information. So, yeah, in summary, I think there's some grave concerns here. Māori data sovereignty rights, there's been totally ignored in this. And it's, yeah, I think that's a major concern, which by ignoring data sovereignty rights, our Te Tiriti rights have been ignored. And the United Nations Declaration of the Rights of Indigenous Peoples, which the New Zealand government signed up to in 2010, has also been ignored. And I think we need to start asking some very serious questions. Why? Why is this happening? We have good infrastructure in New Zealand now. We have at least one New Zealand company that has servers in New Zealand which could handle this. And so, yeah, I think we just need to start asking why. I also think that this could probably contribute to some of the COVID conspiracy theorists as well. If the government's not being fully transparent, yeah, I mean, some people could start questioning what else is going on, with everything else. So I think perhaps a bit of a PA disaster for the ministry.
They're used to PR disasters, though, is the ministry, aren't they? Especially around this COVID thing. So, in terms of our data, then, And when I say our data is offshore, people would say, well, the cloud's offshore. Yeah, sure. But the fact is then, under US law, which this company is, then are they able to take our information without notice and use it in any form and in any way at any time they wish?
Sure. So it's probably, I think the big issue is we're not covered by the Privacy Act once our data resides in America. And we're not covered by the Privacy Act when our data is hosted with an American company. Those three pieces of legislation essentially say if the US government suspects that there is a terrorist or someone who may harm the American country or economy or people, then essentially they have the power, the American government have the power to seize that data and do what they want to ascertain if there's a threat or not. And the Privacy Act, just won't come into effect.
Because our Privacy Act is our Privacy Act, nobody else's Privacy Act.
That's correct. Once our data leaves our shores, the Privacy Act doesn't apply anymore.
In terms of our whānau, going back to our whānau who are unable to access their passports, although they may very well be double dotted, then how would they be able to, how can they cope? How can they, surely this is inequitable access to data, to their health statistics, inequitable access to be able to a freedom of movement around the country for those that don't have the data here in Tamaki Makaurau, as an example, that may be double dotted, won't be able to move on December the 15th, won't be able to show that they have got, that they have been double jabbed, will they? Or do they have to go through that process of being tested and showing that they are a negative, 72-hour negative case?
Sure. So in terms of the vaccine passport, basically there will be inequities because as we saw with the COVID lockdowns, especially in Auckland, we had a lot of Māori and Pacific Island families who did not have internet at home, who did not have devices. And it's not unusual for one family to share a cell phone, especially low socioeconomic communities, Māori, Pacific Islanders. So the issue that those people will face, who gets to have the passport vaccine, the vaccine passport, then who has to actually ring up the Ministry of Health and request a paper copy? So I'm not sure how long postal mail takes to send out and how long the passport will take to print and to be sent out, but 4 weeks might be pushing it for a lot of people. Now, just speaking about some of my own whānau, they live in the rural area where there is no internet connection, there's no 3G, and they have to rely on what's on the TV news. So there's a good chance that we're going to have a lot of discrimination against rural Māori and Pacifica people simply because they can't get access to the internet or knowledge to ring up and get a copy sent out. In terms of the, I'm not sure how it will work with actual physical testing to prove 72 hours in advance. But again, I can imagine a lot of our rural communities, what will they do if there's no testing? Again, my whānau, there's no testing facilities out of the marae, so what do they do? How do they get around the 72-hour test? I'm not sure.
So I tried to get onto the website today to get my passport, and I tried for 45 minutes. I wasn't able to, so I took it that the website had crashed. Now that's going to be an issue. For how long do you think it will be an issue for those to get their passports? And is there an issue with having a host who's not here? I mean, we know technology is a great and wonderful thing, but is there an issue with having our host not here, domiciled here, as to the ability for us to get our passports in a timely fashion?
Mm-hmm. So I heard Minister Hipkins this morning saying the system could handle several hundred applications per second. I think if we had a New Zealand company, they would be commercially motivated to up the ante and increase the space. But I think when we're dealing with corporates, how much of a commercial incentive do they have to increase the space to get more registrations? But like you, I spent 30 minutes tonight trying to log on, and yeah, with no luck at all. So,
Who is this company? Do we know them? Are they reputable? Are they really American? Who are the faces behind this company? What do we know of them? Do they do anything else for NZ? Why were they chosen? What was the tendering process?
I'm not sure how they were chosen, but by using different, technical tools and skills, I found out tonight it was Amazon Web Services, the company. I mean, of course, they're a large international conglomerate in terms of data, cloud data, etc.
Are they the same Amazon people that we know as Amazon people that we can go on and buy things? Or are there several types of Amazon companies and this is just one of them?
I think it's a subsidiary of the Amazon company we know. I'm not 100% familiar with the who's who in there. But.
And who are the faces behind Amazon then?
That is a good question, but I think, I'm not 100% sure, but that they are all, very rich, elite, American, white businessmen.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, exactly, yes.
Oh, dear. And finally, then, Mr. Hipkins was asked a question during the stand-up around, no, I'm sorry, was it Minister Hipkins? Anyway, somebody was asked in the stand-up today at 1 o'clock around the delay that of this. It was meant to have rolled out a lot earlier, something like July, it's now October. Do you know of the reasons why? He said that there was a lot in play, it took months to organise. Good enough excuse, or is it simply because, well, they're over there and we're here?
I guess I can only speak from a technical perspective because I don't know of the contracts and the human issues. But what the COVID record passport is very technically complex and it's full of potential security holes. I guess I personally would have been concerned if it got rolled out too quickly. And so I think it was probably, my professional opinion would be that through testing, earlier on, they probably realised there was a whole lot of security issues they hadn't thought of. And this is not uncommon with systems like this. But again, if it was a local company, reputation and commercial incentives may have made it a lot quicker.
Should we be concerned? And I've asked you that before. Should we be concerned that it wasn't a local company, given that, Whakarongo, the COVID tracer people, they're not local. And, they might have an office based here somewhere in Aotearoa, but they're essentially international with a Māori name, and we're giving them our data, and we're giving these other people our data. We can't even share our data amongst ourselves with Māori. How should I be reacting to all of this, apart from being flabbergasted?
Sure. I'm hoping this will send a clear signal to the New Zealand government that we need to consider data sovereignty rights for iwi, for Māori, hapū and marae. And we need to really consider how best we can share our information with our own people, if we choose so. At the moment, we have this, you know, the Privacy Act, which is basically a Eurocentric, you know, tool, which isn't designed for Māori. It's designed for the Eurocentric society. We need to review that. We need to review our intellectual property rights. And we just need to have a major overhaul and start respecting Māori data sovereignty rights. And this COVID breakout has been, I think we've seen a number of instances and justifications for seriously right now.
Thank you for joining us this afternoon. Always wonderful to kōrero with you, Mr. Taiuru. We will speak again, no doubt. Me tuku mihi.
No doubt.
Tēnā koe.
Kia ora.
Thanks very much to Karaitiana Taiuru.